Earlier this month, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg partnered with Rabbi Lauren Holtzblatt to write a feminist reading of the Passover story. It happened at the behest of the American Jewish World Service and is offered for use at this year's Passover Seder. I am really delighted to be joined by Rabbi Lauren Holtzblatt of Addis Israel, a conservative synagogue in Washington, D.C. Rabbi, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure and an honor to be here with you today.
I've got to begin by saying, how did this happen? Did the collaboration on the commentary titled The Heroic and Visionary Women of Passover with Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, how did this come about?
Well, I got lucky, or those of us that are in this faith tradition believe, right, there's no coincidence. My husband, Ari Holtzblatt, is one of the clerks for Justice Ginsburg this year. Mm-hmm. And when AJWS actually reached out to Justice Ginsburg to ask her if she would be willing to write this piece, beautifully she came and asked me if I would be willing to help her. She said she had a strong idea of what she wanted to write about, mm-hmm. and she definitely wanted to be a feminist reading, and asked me if I would help her in the process and team up with her.
So you got up off the floor and said yes.
That's exactly right. I said, what?
Well, it's a beautiful piece, and you all did remarkable work on it. The women that you highlight in this piece are not household names.
Right. The five women that we highlighted are women that are already in the text. So though Batya's name is not mentioned in that beginning part of the story in Exodus, she's present, right? Her mm-hmm. her story is present, and Shifra and Pua and Yocheved and Miriam are all in the text. And one of the things that we felt was important was, instead of their beautiful midrashim, which are sort of extra stories outside of the Torah, when the rabbis felt there was sort of a missing space, they mm-hmm. would add a story, which is part of the Jewish canon that we read. But we thought it was important to stick to the Torah text itself. And we said, you know, if we read this story as Jews every year, I mean, we read it multiple times a year, but we read it in particular the two nights of Seder, where we mm-hmm. sit and we tell the story of Moses and Pharaoh and God and the people. And we never mention these women that are mm-hmm. part of this story, that their names are there, their stories are there, the details of what they did and the defiance in which they acted in order to get this people out of Egypt. It's fascinating when you think about it, that in our lives, even every day, people play roles that we sometimes shift and we don't see them mm-hmm. for various reasons, whether it's about issues of race or class or gender. But there are many people that are in our places of work in society that are invisible because of how we view the world. And mm-hmm. what we wanted to say was, let's take a look of who's already here that hasn't been given a face, right? That their names have not been raised up, and let's raise them up.
I know I have shared in a Seder meal with several friends across the years. Mm. And frankly, I didn't remember these names from that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because they're women, or is it just because the people who do the interpreting at the Seder meal don't think they are that important to the story?
Mm, that's a great question. You know, I think as religious people, we get certain tropes in our mind, right? We have stories of the way things happen, right? It's how we learn to read stories by those who come before us. Mm-hmm. And many times that's wonderful, right? We have beautiful traditions from ancestors, from teachers, from, in my tradition, from rabbis. But at the same time, what that does is it also narrows our vision. Mm-hmm. Right? So we see the stories that came before us in the way that they've been told to us by the generations before us. And if those generations didn't see these particular people as being critical in the story, then they don't retell that, even if it's in the text itself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the dialogue between the stories we tell through our oral tradition and the text itself have to always continually speak to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're sending messages both by the narratives we tell, but our text is also speaking to us in a very deep way. Mm-hmm. And so this was sort of to say, let's go back to the original narrative, right? Let's go back to the Torah and make sure that we've actually given it the widest view that we can. Mm-hmm. Not meaning that Moses isn't still incredibly important. He's the main actor here, or Aaron, his brother, or God, right, who actually is the main actor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to say that we take those people away, but let's also open our mind's eye to part of the narrative that we've forgotten to tell.
When you add emphasis or focus on these women, what does it do to the Exodus story for you? How does it change the way you look at it?
Mm. Oh, you have great questions. Well, I'm a woman, obviously, and what it does for me is it allows me to see myself in the story. It's mm-hmm. not that when a man is in the story, I can't see myself there, because I do. I mm-hmm. relate to Jacob and Abraham and Isaac and aspects of who they are and their personalities and Joseph and many men throughout this tradition I relate to because of who they are and the Torah that they teach. But mm-hmm. there is something different about having a woman and saying, that could have been me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's seeing yourself in that character. And I'll just give a little anecdote, which is that I have a daughter and a son. My daughter is 7. My son is almost 4. And I've been prepping them at dinner every night. We talk about the Passover story. We go over the 4 questions. We've been kind of prepping ourselves for the mm-hmm. Seder. And after this piece came out, I said, I better do my homework at home. And I said to my kids, you know, talk to me about who your favorite characters are. And my daughter immediately said, Miriam. And I said, why? And she said, because she was a sister like me. She had a younger brother, and she cared for him, and she loved him, and she wanted to see him be successful, which that was a good moment between my kids. They certainly, we have plenty of hair pulling and kicking and all that going on in the house, too. So I'm honest, right?
Yeah.
But it was a moment when I said, this is why it's important, because she now sees herself in that story as a girl, mm-hmm. right? It's not just that boys and men can be leaders, which they are and have been and given such beautiful Torah to the Jewish tradition, but that as a girl, you have a role too. And as a woman, you have a place to shine and bring the light of what you bring into this world to make it a little bit holier.
I have had the good fortune to read the meditation and commentary that you and Justice Ginsburg wrote. Now, our listeners have not had that opportunity, perhaps. I wish you would tell them about the women that you focused on in the story and comment on how partnerships with women like this add to the story and what contributions they make if we know them.
Ah, that's beautiful. We talk about 5 different women in the commentary. We talk about, maybe I'll do it sort of chronologically.
Sure.
We talk about Yocheved, who was Moses' mother, and Yocheved birthing Moses at this particular moment. And in the Torah, we're told that Pharaoh made a decree that all the boys would be thrown into the Nile, the Israelite boys. And she makes a basket, and she is going to save this child. And in many ways, to even have a child in that moment is an act of defiance, because mm-hmm. by birthing a child, you're saying, I believe that there's something different in this world. I'm living in the midst of slavery, and I'm ready to continue to see a new light that's going to come about. Mm-hmm. So she births this boy, and she puts him in a basket. And Miriam, who in the Jewish tradition is thought of as a prophet, there's a midrash, which is that extra sort of rabbinical story that doesn't appear in the Torah itself, but it appears in the rabbi's writings, has a prophecy that this boy is going to grow up and take the children of Israel out of Egypt with God's help. And once the decree comes down from Pharaoh, her parents say, you know, this prophecy couldn't be true, right? Because if it were, this wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't have to throw him in the Nile. So what Miriam does is she follows the basket all the way down the Nile and almost hovering over it and protecting it to make sure it ends up at the feet of Batya, who is Pharaoh's daughter. So in many ways, it's the birth of this child right, that is then protected and fostered by these women. Actually, I forgot to mention Shifra and Pua, who are the Hebrew midwives in the text, who we also highlight in the story, who Pharaoh says to them, this is what you do when the babies come out and they're boys, you throw them in the Nile, and they defy Pharaoh. And actually, they are later, they're lifted up by God for defying Pharaoh and helping save these baby boys. And then it's Pharaoh's daughter who's bathing in the Nile at the time that the basket is so protectively, beautifully moved to her feet by Miriam. And she, her, there's also a midrash about Batya, which says that at the moment that she was going to take this Israelite baby out of the water, her maidservant said to her, don't do it, remember your father's decree. And she turned to them and said, I'm going to do it anyway. And she went and took this baby out of the Nile and named him Moshe, or Moses as we know him in English, and she raised him in the palace. And so the whole idea here is that, you know, moments of liberation and moments of redemption don't happen in a moment, right? Mm-hmm. As we know by so many of the beautiful movements in our own country, they happen by many hands, many visions, many people being able to come together and push us over to the place of liberation. Mm-hmm. And that's what these women do. They team up one by one by one, and they say, we want to see something different. Mm-hmm. We're going to put our lives on the line in order that this child is going to end up in the right place so that he can grow up and bring us out of this place of narrowness into something more.
Oh, that's terrific.
Thank you.
Justice Ginsburg has said publicly that she's not observant. Did her secular Judaism bring with it the desire to make a commentary on these women accessible to both observant and non-observant Jews?
Well, I can't comment on Justice Ginsburg's observance, but what I can say is that the story of these women and Justice Ginsburg's own work on the court and really in her whole career has always raised up women and given women a chance to shine in places that publicly and privately in ways that they've been shining anyway but haven't necessarily been given the credit. And I think that this piece goes very much in line with sort of the same thing of that women are here and they're in this story, and what we need to do is open our vision and be able to see all of the people that stand and do good work.
So what was it like working with this Supreme Court justice who's notorious for her thorough and meticulous approach to writing opinions from the bench?
Well, I had the great fortune of having my husband be a guide to me, who has been working with Justice Ginsburg since July of last year. So the clerkship is 1 year long from July to July. So I used him for help, to help me stay on point and be meticulous, and to help me talk with her about, you know, exactly what she wanted to do, because the truth of it is she's notorious for me. She's a huge role model for me. So I was definitely starstruck in this whole process. So what I can say is that she is meticulous, she is visionary, and she is succinct. I've never seen someone work so succinctly and be so meticulous and on point. It's really, it's a vision.
Lauren Holtzblatt is a rabbi at Ottis Israel, a conservative synagogue in Washington, D.C., where she co-created YP at AI for Jewish Young Professionals, the Macomb, D.C. Learning Center, and the Jewish Mindfulness Center of Washington, D.C. Earlier this month, at the behest of the humanitarian organization American Jewish World Service, she collaborated with Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg to write a feminist commentary on the Passover story. We'll, by the way, link to that piece at stateofbelief.com. You can go there and see it. And Lauren, let me tell you, what you've done for us today in your commentary on the commentary is you've provided a wonderful meditation from which we can see insights that help us in a world that hasn't quite yet embraced women as the valuable persons they are in so many different ways, and you've helped us embrace truth in the whole Passover story that will make our lives better. I thank you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you today.